Okay, 1 year.
Starting?
I guess so.
Okay.
I think the shul does. This is the shul, no?
Not on the website.
Is this the shul recording?
Yeah.
I guess you have to ask whoever.
There's a backlog. They're putting it all up. I'm not the one who does it. So.
Digital Services has been lagging. BTYA Digital Services.
So I try to stay away.
Okay, well, I'm the. I will add before I forget. Next week, in Yetz Hashem, will be the last week, not this week. Next week, we're doing Tumos, Maestros, and all as per the Rabbi's request. So we added a week. It's Shovim plus one. Okay, this week we're doing wine. I think, unfortunately, most people believe it's. What's the big deal? You buy kosher wine, you're done. But actually, I think wine is one of the most neglected aspects of kashrus, because we tend to buy mahagan wines and most people aren't aware there's anything else to worry about, when in fact wine can be abused from a halachic point of view very easily. Okay, I have to say, I was speaking to someone last night after she classes in my house, and for me, the wine is the epitome of it, but the wine and the pasi soil and the bishu soil, these are all, as Shulchan Aruch says, the inyanim is to prevent katnut, that Chazal wanted to prevent us from getting too friendly and too chummy with goyim, and chas v'shalom ultimately getting to the point where you are like in the United States, where intermarriage is a way of life, unfortunately, never. And I really see it, you know, when you're in America, you see how wine is definitely a key that opens up people's neshama. They get relaxed, it lets down barriers, and it's not stam, there's no reason that the Chazal didn't put these halachas in place to keep us in line. Okay, the first concept is Yain Nesach. Yain Nesach is wine that was mamish used for idol worship. While Bonim pretty much say today it's not Nogeya, but friends of mine who spent years in India in their former lives say that in places like these parts of the world, that Yain Nesach is alive and well, and where people still use wine for idol worship. But Yain Nesach is a no-no, it's mamish asur, it's a serious inyan. And I gave you the makorot. Okay. More commonly what we have, when Yain Nesach... Okay. If you look at the last paragraph on the first page, I quoted Rav Amram Edri. Rav Amram Edri, by the way, he writes a Sfarim on Kashrus that I use. He also wrote an encyclopedia on Kashrus. He's a noted expert in Eretz Yisrael on Kashrus, as Sfardi Rav. He was, from what I understand, the chief advisor on Yonanei Kashrut for Kashrus stuff, Rav Mordechai Eliezer. Just to give you an idea, he's not just Tom and other Rav that's out there. And as a result, being that he was in line with Rav Eliezer's Piskei Halach, he's also usually, when there's a chance to be strict or less strict, Rav Mordechai Eliezer was always more strict. Rav Mordechai Eliezer would like Bishul Yisrael, holds from the strictest they owe, there's no, he doesn't accept any heterim, including boiling water, he said, had to be Bishul Yisrael. But in any event, as I wrote here, Rav Edri says that in his Sefer HaKashrut Kalacha, that even if someone needs Yayin Nesach for medicinal reasons, a derivative of the Yayin Nesach, that is still prohibited. Ad kedei kach, that this wine is so usa that we just possibly not allowed to have any benefit from any changes of anything, even medicinally. While there are possible, of course, like the Tzur and others that say this is not the case, and you may. In any event, no, excuse me, let's correct ourselves. That Yain Nesach is prohibited, excuse me, Poskim don't permit it, Chas V'Shalom. Yain Nesach is permitted because it was used for Avodah Zarah, and that's the end of the case. The next category, which is the more common category, which we'll address in greater depth tonight, is Stam Yeinam. Stam Yeinam means wine that, I would say best translated, is not, wine that's rendered not kosher, but it wasn't used for idol worship. So it's a category in between. You have kosher wine, that's wine that has a hashgacha, and then you have non-kosher wine, that's a non-starter. We know if wine doesn't have a hashgacha, no one has a havamin, and no one has any reason to believe they can use it, and that would be the end of it. The problem comes is when you take a bottle of wine with a Rav this Hechsher or that Hechsher on it, and it gets turned into Stam Yena, meaning it gets either touched by the wrong people, opened by the wrong people, bored by the wrong people, and that's when life becomes significantly more complicated. Okay, as I explained, the Inyan of Stam Yena is also Mitrachet, the Chazal want to keep us away from the Goyim. As I write, the hope is in the early stage of our studies, we're beginning to get the picture that we're supposed to be distant from the nation, as we know we're supposed to be from Lechis Kohanim and Goyim Kadosh. And this entails living separately and mingling amongst our own, and even amongst our own, there are many restrictions how we do act, and things that are not permitted, even though Western society does not view them as taboo. Okay, I think the problem here, on the one hand, used to be much easier in Eretz Yisrael because we tend to hang out with the Goyim less than in America in the workplace, but the truth is now, after over 250,000 non-Jews made Aliyah from the former Soviet Union, and there were many, many caretakers in Eretz Yisrael, tens of thousands. People have laborers in their homes, they have workers, whether it's domestic help, construction workers, plumbers, contractors, many are non-Jewish. So all of these things come into play. And I think you need to understand that the halacha is specific and it doesn't leave leeway necessarily for you trusting someone or not trusting someone. It has to do with a non-Jew being in the home under certain conditions, and that's enough to render wine unfit for us to use. Okay, stories we'll skip, this is just for you for reading. Okay, on page 3, the Levush, who I quote, reminds us the main reason for prohibiting any benefit from Stam Yenam is to keep us away from the Goyim, from their daughters. Well aware of what happens when people get together drinking wine, the prohibition only exists on wine since Chazal realized that wine has an effect on people. Okay, I will also add, I think, because wine is unique in its bracha, wine is unique in its role in Yiddishkeit. We're Mekadesh Shabbos, Mekadesh Yom, we're Mekadesh Yontov, we use it for bris, we use it for simcha. So wine is a unique drink that, with its special kedusha, also comes with its special set of restrictions, which too many people are simply not familiar with. The Ben Ish Chai, who's also very strict, goes on and expounds, and he talks about different inyanim that has to do with Stam Yenam. As he write here, where is I'm looking, he explains drinking prohibited wine, in quotes, cuts off one's soul from its heavenly roots. That's the Ben Ish Chai. And he basically says that there's no room for leniency, we have to address the inyan of wine very seriously. Okay, I write on the bottom of that page is one of the more common places where I've seen people just don't think about it because it's a kosher sponsored event and kosher people attending, many times people in the neighborhood and friends that we know. You go to a simple wine and tasting event, or you go to a chasna, and as we come along, I think, as we go along in the sheet, I think some of the issues will become clear and I think it will be an eye-opener in many areas. I will say, I recently went to a chasna in Binyanei Ha'umah, which was billed as an Eidah Haredit wedding, which I knew wasn't, but everyone said I was wrong and it was, everyone being the few people that asked me. So we walked into the lobby, it was a nice event, quite fancy. On the left side, there were people dressed in the penguin outfit, you know, the bow ties, and they were pouring wine for the guests, the tray set up. So I said to my wife, look to your left, look at the wine, now you know it's not Eidah Haredit. People pouring the wine, we're not Shomer Shabbos. So right from the get-go, it takes a few seconds, if you wanted to find out or to ascertain if the wedding was under Eidah Haredit or Rav Reuben, Rav Landau, or any of the better badats, if you'd know within seconds, look at the wine pouring, it's not the case. Doesn't matter if it was Mavush or twice, they wouldn't let a non-Fum guy touch a bottle of wine. If you go to Gutnik, which is under the Eidah Haredit hall in Givat Shaul, generally speaking, the crowd that goes to Chasna there are quite orthodox by any standard, and there are no can openers on the table. If you want to open a bottle of wine, the Mashgiach has to come and open it. That's just their klal, that's the way the Eidah operates, the way it should operate, actually. And they don't play, that's the way it is. And was it Mavushal or not? Much of it was not, to answer your question. Just like another place I went to a little after that, a week or two within that, somewhere in Yerushalayim and Talpiot, even a fancier place. I just watched. They were filling up. I was in amazement. They had large barrels, and they were just putting the empty bottles into barrels, wooden barrels. And your mom just filled up 2 barrels of empty bottles. That's how much wine people were drinking. This was actually a good place to give a class because the non-religious Jews were pouring the wine, which was by and large not mevushel because it was better wine. The better the wine is, generally speaking, the less chance that it's mevushel. There are exceptions, but generally speaking, when you get into the higher end table wines, they're not mevushel because mevushel, by definition, diminishes a wine qualitatively. And then at the other end of the open area, they had all the non-religious Jews cooking on the grill and frying everything up. So you could have your bishul akum, then walk down the end and have your stami anam. And it was quite an event. I asked the mashgiach what's going on, and he says, what are you going to do? It's not that from a crowd. I said, you could do it right. That's what you could do. You know, I didn't know what are you going to do. But it wasn't a mahadran hefsha, and they said, you don't have to have bishul soil. Which is right, but there was no excuse for the wine. The cooking you can get away with, but not the wine, but that's what it is. So seeing that it happens and there's a hefsher in certain places is not a riot for anything, that's the point. Okay. And I wrote on the end of page 3, going into page 4 already, where a prominent American Ashkocha, I didn't ask if I should advertise it, so I don't, but they had to give Ashkocha for a wine and tasting event. They couldn't get out of it for all different reasons that are not relevant. But the point is, he detailed for me how they arranged it. One of the things they did is, the Rabbanim did not put on short waiter jackets, bow ties, and white gloves, but they replaced the waiters nonetheless. And the deal was, no one except for the rabbis were allowed to pour the wine, for one thing, and no one was allowed to have a refill. You had to take a new glass. And if you don't understand, as we go through, this will become evident as well. But those were the two ground rules for this kosher supervised wine tasting event. We'll get into it. We'll cover it all. Okay, some of the practical concerns and pertinent halachot. By the way, when we say wine, the halacha also applies to grape juice. I don't mean Welch's grape juice or whatever that stuff's called. I'm talking about any grape juice that has grape yagofen. It's the same halacha as wine. So if it's non-mavushal grape yagofen, grape juice can become impure or prohibited the same way wine can. Some people are not aware of grape juice. Anything grape yagofen has the same halacha, in short. Okay. When you buy wine in the little box, we have to make sure the double seal is intact. That is one of the reasons there's a double seal. Because as we learned that some items in halacha require chote mito chote. Meat is one of them. And wine is another. Tchelas happens to be another. Those things, as opposed to cheese or bread, only need one seal. So wine has either a cork or a screw top with a seal on top of it. And if one of those are broken, it's advised by the Badatsim not to buy it because you don't know who the delivery person was. And according to some poskim, if the delivery person was a non-Jew, for sure, and according to some, a non-religious Jew, wine with one seal, even if it wasn't open, should not be used l'chatchila. For Ashkenazim, if a family member remains at home, one seal is sufficient. Even if a non-Jew moves the bottle when cleaning the refrigerator. Now we're talking about domestic health. For as long as the seal is a valid indicator, the bottle is not open. The Shach and the Taz add that a single closure is sufficient even if the family member is not home the entire time. But if one comes and goes, Yosef and Nichnas, this too suffices. I heard Rabbanim explain that it's better to tell an employee, you know, I'll see you later, I'll be in and out. Not to say, for a lot of halachic reasons, wine is a biggie. It's not a good thing to tell a non-Jewish cleaning person at 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm out for the day, I'll see you back tonight at 6. You leave yourself open for a lot of things, and I dare say some of the Rabbanim in this community that I know would tell you, if you did that and no one was home all day, you have to take your open bottles of wine and throw them out. So you need to get in tune with these halachas, and if your life does include having some kind of a domestic, you may want to speak to your rav and ask him what you should do. The easy solution is very simple. Take a piece of masking tape, put it around the bottle, sign it like a signature, and you can see if anyone opened it or tore it, you know, and that's the end of it, the wine was sealed. That's the easiest way out. But there are other things you can do as well, and one of them is, if the person thinks you can go in and out, just like Lahav deal with things of Yichud, if you know anyone can come in at any moment, in certain situations it alleviates it, the same as the truth with wine. But it is very important to know if there's non-Jewish people in the house working, you need to address the wine situation. Wine is generally not used for avodah zarah. That's the psak. I think in the Western world anyway. I don't know other than, you know, what goes on the other side of town. So that does make things significantly easier. Because wine that was used for avodah zarah, yayin nesef, not only can't you drink it, but you also can't have anor from it. Whereas tam yeinam, even though you can't drink it, you're allowed to have anor, you're allowed to benefit from it. So you could give the bottle to a goy. I don't know, you could use it, I guess, for fragrance, burn it somehow, whatever you can do with wine. The point is, you're allowed to have benefit from it. So there's already a big difference between tam yeinam and yayin nesef.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Problem?
Nothing's a problem if you handle it right. I don't want to say because I don't. I meant to write it and I didn't. I have to go to their website. If you go to the Kedem website, it says it somewhere because I went and looked. Pretty much, they have a very. I think almost everything is mevushel except for certain half-gallon jars, half-gallon large bottles of wine or grape juice. I'm not going to tell you. I don't know. I can. Let me tell you this way. What I do know. The rule of thumb in Eretz Yisrael is, and I went to Eder Chavedit, Rav Rubin, and Bell's. So I took the rule from them since they give wine, a lot of Hechsher, and that's the wine you'll find, at least the stuff, whatever. They say, the rule of thumb in Eretz Yisrael is, if it does not say Mevushel, it's not. That's the rule. If you're not sure, it's not. It doesn't say Mevushel, it's not. And Mevushel I see, a lot of them will say Mevushel in English and or Hebrew. It's not uncommon. Chevron wines, I think, writes it in the front. Whatever the case is, like Chevron wines, many of them are not marked. I asked Bells, they said, if it doesn't say it, it's not. That's the rule of thumb. So I don't know about the Geula wines, which is a special one of Kedem with an Eder Chavedit Hechsher. I have no idea, I'm not going to say it. I think the Kedem website, when I remember, says specifically, pretty much everything's Mevushel with the exception of, and it lists the exceptions. The Eretz Yisrael wines, if it does not say it, then you assume it's not. Okay, like I said, since wine is generally not used for avodah zarah, there are different opinions about going touching it, and it depends on the hefsin meruba. The hefsin meruba, by no definition, means I don't want to throw out a bottle of wine. That's not a hefsin meruba, unless chas v'shalom someone is in a really hard case. I have to say I don't think most of them would call a bottle of wine hefsin meruba. But when you have a shaili, ask a rav. That's the bottom line. The idea is what we're trying to learn is how to avoid getting into these sticky situations, and not what you do afterwards. Okay, on page 5. There is a difference between someone who's mamish on Oved Avodah Zarah, like Christianity, and Muslims, which were not Oved Avodah Zarah. So we may prefer one more than the other, but the bottom line is, from a halachic point of view, and is a Muslim is less problematic than a Christian, as far as touching wine. Muslims or idol worshippers render wine not kosher, which means tam yeinam, but it's not prohibited to have hano. If touching the wine was not intentional, then one may drink it as well. That's a very gray area. I added it in and I put him a call because it's important to be accurate. But if you want to drink wine based on what Ahmed tells you his kavana was or not, that's your call. It doesn't work for me. So the idea is, but it's important to put these things in, just like you'll see it further down. If a goy takes the wine and says, I'm going to trafe all this wine up and does it, lahachlis, it's also not trafe. But the point is, the idea is to know lechachila how to work with the wine. In case of Christians, however, because they're over avodah zarah, their touch renders the wine not kosher, may not benefit, and may not derive benefits, asubano as well. But one who admits to monotheism and does not have idols of any kind, stam yeinam, is only prohibited from drinking, not from anah. So like I said, the big difference from the get-go is stam yeinam is also lachila, you can't drink it, but it's mutar b'anah, you're allowed to have benefit from it. If a non-Jew touches wine, it becomes prohibited, no matter how young he may be, for as long as he's old enough to understand the concept of idol worship. The point here is the significant difference of a non-Jew is an idol worship or not. On a practical level, in Eretz Yisrael today, is the difference if a Christian or Muslim touches the wine, with the former categorized as an idol worshiper. Okay, one who succumbed to drank Yayin Nesef should fast for 5 days. I put these things in here because I think it's important when the Ramah brings down such an inyan to get an idea of how strict we're talking about the issue is. Not just how big could it be. I'd say if the Ramah says fast for 5 days, that's pretty heavy. The main penitence is remorse, in one's heart and committing to avoiding to repeat transgression. That's tshuva. You get back into the same situation as the Rambam says in Hilchas Tshuva, and you don't repeat the Aveira. Making a decision not to succumb to temptation in the future regarding any beverage or food that is not kosher. Vessels that held non-Jewish wine must be kosher, with the exception of glass, which only requires a thorough washing. If 12 months have passed since the wine was in the vessel, then it is sufficient. I will add, by the way, while the Rav is in no way halachically responsible for the words that come out of my mouth, everything that I've been using for text that I've written over the weeks is given to Rabbi Malinowitz a week in advance to approve or disapprove. So I don't start anything here without making sure first the Rav approves the chachilah of what's written. So at least I may mess up in what I say, but at least you can go by what's written. It is written one should avoid buying items in a store owned by a Jew who sells non-kosher wines. One restriction is there, he's praiseworthy, and thus we learn also Makorot on the bottom. I will say again, I say it a lot in Yerushalayim, I refer back frequently to Yerushalayim because that's my home base, and that's why I really know better, even though I've learned Beit Shemesh somewhat through the Kashrus Guide over 2 years. But in Rehov Agrippus, which is the back street of the Shuk, I can picture three large wine stores. It's an area where you want the stores that sell nothing but wine, soft drinks, and alcoholic beverages. So being me, I do my shtick, that's how I learn, you test things. Baruch Hashem, this is easier than when you go through the garbage. Here I just went into a store, without, just like this. Obviously I look Jewish, and I put bottles of wine on the table without hashgacha to buy them. And Baruch Hashem, in three of the four stores that I went to, told me don't buy this wine, doesn't have a shkacha. So I was very impressed. That was nice to see that somebody's looking out. The point being, one of the owners explained to me, for example, there are a lot of Romanian non-Jews who work here in the construction industry. And he said, this is a people that likes to drink. The Russians, he told me, drink vodka. It's not a myth, they do. But the Romanians drink this cheap wine, which costs like 9 shekels a bottle. And it's this dreck that they're bringing from Romania. It's an amazing thing. They're importing it and selling it for 9 shekels a bottle. And people are making money on it. So this must be, I don't know what it is. But the point being, he said, there's no hashgacha on it whatsoever. So, and especially the seminary students, the yeshiva students that come post high school, all they see, if you can envision a label on a wine bottle now that's in your home, or go home and look at it, I dare say there's nothing on the food market that has so many letters per square inch, or per square centimeter, than a bottle of wine. It's just inundated with Hebrew words. And someone who's not proficient in the language, like many of the students visiting on New Orleans times, they just see Hebrew all over the place. There's a few seals. This is it. This is the best there is. All right? And a lot of what's being written talks about the bouquet and where it comes from, the history of the company. It will also mention at times if it's pasteurized or not. We'll cover that as well. But many times it talks about recommended serving temperature. So not knowing Hebrew, looking and seeing a lot of Hebrew on a bottle of wine with some kind of a squiggly or a symbol is not constitute kosher. So you really have to be careful. There are many trafe wines in the marketplace. I will say, I didn't look like I did in Yerushalayim beer, but the stores I went to here, I have to say, I didn't see any wine without hashgacha. Someone, doesn't mean, again, my definition is good hashgacha doesn't necessarily mean suitable heksher. So a good heksher could be whatever hashgacha it is, and you may use it, you may not use it, and that's fine. But you just have to, at least the starting point is to validate that the wine has hashgacha. That's a good starting point. Yayin esef that became mixed with kosher wine is never nullified. Afilu lo be'elef. You know, when Halacha teaches us afilu lo be'elef, it doesn't mean 1,000 for one is bittul. It means it's never but bittul. So that means Yayin Esef that's mixed with kosher wine is out. So you can take your half a bottle of Yayin Esef and mix it in a case of wine and hope to accomplish something, and you basically glued the case of wine. Again, I think that's a statement of how potent an issue of it is, and we have to be careful with it. According to the Shulchan Aruch, if Stam Yeinum is mixed with kosher wine, it too is prohibited, and one may not sell it to a non-Jew, and funds generated from the wine are also prohibited. Ashkenazim Stam Yeinan that is mixed with kosher wine is Batul Shishim the one. And here's where the Svarim are stricter. So in the case we see regarding this matter, Svarim are more stringent. However, if wine is mixed with water, 6 to 1, that's also fine. Meaning, for some bizarre reason, if you want to take a good bottle of wine, add 6 parts of water, and then say, leave the cleaning lady alone because she can't do anything wrong with it, I don't see what you have to worry about because you've wounded already by adding 6 parts of water. So you can take your chances with the cleaning woman or you can do it for sure yourself. But if you had 6 parts of water to the bottle of wine, you have nothing to worry about. I also doubt you can make a brave Pierre Guffin on that afterwards. You'd have to probably add a lot more wine to it at the end of the day. One may not intentionally dilute prohibited mixture, meaning once it's stam yenam, you can add a water truck to it. It doesn't help. It's possible it's out. Once it's out, it's out. What you can do by adding water to it is preventing the situation from becoming that. Truth is, if you were going to use wine for cooking, and you were going to add it to a pot of water, so if you add it in advance, that takes care of your problem. If you had 6 parts of water and a 1 part of wine, and a pot that's going to be used to cook some piece of meat in there, then it doesn't matter who's walking around the house, because it's no longer classified as wine. So as we're beginning to see, a non-Jew cannot simply handle wine as such. Wineries with a respectable hafsha, and that is the case with Carmel or any Chavedit wine, will not employ non-Jews. As a matter of fact, they will not let any non-Shomer Shabbos Jew near the wine. That's the way it is in Carmel. You're not frum, you don't get near the wine, because they have to be Lav Rubin, the Chavedit bells, they're all the Chevron wines, Lav Dov Lior, who also gives extra Chevron wines. They're not playing around. Anyone, wineries as a rule is 2 things. One, only religious people go near the wine. And two, it's kosher or Pesach year round. 2 general rules with wine. Actually, there was a scandal within the last year. They found a roll inside the winery. If you follow Jerusalem Kosher News, you're learning how to read between the lines, you can catch the politics as well. But last year, the Chevron Wineries, which is under the Bell's Hashkacha, as well as Rav Dov Lior Shlita, the chief rabbi of Kiryat Arba, who's a big Talmud Chacham, the rabbinate took the Hashkacha off the Chevron Wines. So my first reaction is, okay, big deal, there's still a lot of Bell's, whoever's going to buy one's going to buy the other, so who cares? But it does care, because once it no longer had a chief rabbinate Heksha, it was banned from all the wedding halls and anything with rabbinate Hashkacha. So they got hit hard. So I knew who to call then. I could find out. It had nothing to do with kashrus to Chevron Wine's credit. But all it had to do was with the rabbanut, in this case, flexing its political muscle. And the rabbanut's no worse than some of the other hashkafas when they flex their badatz muscles. In this case, it was the rabbanut. So because the guy who owns the wine company, who's a frum guy, he's a Yiras Shamayim, and he's been the same guy with the same hashem from day one, he didn't want to add extra hours for hashkafa that the rabbanut wanted. So eventually they called his bluff and canceled the Hefsha. At the end, they reached the settlement. But had a person just read it, I was getting emails, so the Rabbanut took away the Hefsha, how can Bell still give it? Which is a fair question. So I just ignored most of the emails. I didn't want to deal with it. Yeah. I don't think anything has more shkochas than the bug-free stuff, but wine is up there, right? You get a bag of lettuce, it says the name of the company has at least 8 hashkachas stamped on it. The wine is close. Wine could have 2 or 3, sometimes 4. I think the same reason, they just want to reach all the markets. Understand something, I mean, this is the real world. They're all going to deny it, but the Metzius is, we'll go to the top end. If a wine has an 8 hachavedit heksha, and then they want to get an OU, like Angels. Angels has an 8 hachavedit, then have OU for the export. And Carmel has an OU too, I believe, because when anything that goes to America, if you want to have a life in the kosher market, you get an OU. But I think it's fair to say that the OU would charge less and demand less supervision if Carmel had no heksha than if they come with an 8 hachavedit heksha. So it's the same kind of thing. Once you have a high-end heksha and you start tagging on some of the others, it's much less expensive. Frequently, I know restaurants would have 2 hashkachas of Rabbanut, Mahadrin, and a Badatz of one another. It's the same mashgiach. It's very common. In America, ironically, they call it piggybacking. When you have one mashgiach with different hashkachas, they call it piggybacking. I don't know why they couldn't call it kosher backing. But it's not uncommon, and I think it's just a business decision. Because the Sfardim are very makpid. The Sfardim have much stricter rules. As far as being the wine being acceptable, I'll pipe Yosef. As far as less water, more wine, Ashkenazim or less. And like Rav Avraham Yosef, who's the chief rabbi of Cholon, of Yosef Shlita, a big Talmud Chacham as well, one of Rav Avadya's sons, but he's he's big in his own right. Like, he will tell people, if you ask him what wine can the Sfardi use, he'll say, Lechatchila you should use Beit Yosef, the Hechsher, because we know it conforms with the Beit Yosef rules for wine. And you can also use Eidech Avedi, because when Eidech Avedi tells you that it's kosher for grape Yagofen, Afilu Ayimishan Oheg Ayideh Beit Yosef, which means there's enough wine and less water, you can trust them. Some of the other Ashlachas just write that, and it's not good. They just add the water anyway, and they write that it's good for Beit Yosef as well. So they did their homework, and you see, the Eidech Avedi is not going to play that game. At the end of the day, there's a lot of, especially in the last few months, with all the political storm in your area by the Beit Avot school and the stuff with the Sikrikim. This is reality in Eretz Yisrael, and it's left a lot of people with a bad flavor klapei the Eidech Avedi, towards the Eidech Avedi. All of that aside, that's not the point here, it's not getting into it, but the point is, the Eidech Avedi, I don't think, are different than any other Kehillah in Am Yisrael. They have their politics and they have their agenda, but at the end of the day, their kashrus is their kashrus, and they're not, like, there was a whole scandal, if you followed it last year as well, between about Hidurim poultry products. Hidurim is an Eidech Avedi, actually, chicken that sells in supermarkets. Ad Kedei Kach, there was stuff in the Chavedi website that it's treif. Mom is treif. They didn't say it's not glad that it's treif and you can't buy it. So I spoke to the heads of Machlaket Shchitan, Eidech Chavedi, some other Rabbanim, and I was comfortable. Because of it, I felt ill at ease because there was so much being written against it. So I spoke to the same Rabbanim who I always consult with, and I said, could you help me here? What's this about? So I got the full explanation, which is not relevant to the latter two, business competition between companies. But at the end of the day, he said, understand one thing, the Eidech Avedi has his mishugas like everybody else. But the Av Bezdin of the Eidech Avedi, it's not selling his Olam Hava. That's where the line stops. And when it comes to not being kosher, it's never going to happen. If they tell you it's kosher, if you call up and he says, if it has this sticker and it has a hologram, we take our flies for it, that's it. This is kosher Mahadran to their standard. They'll fight you in a lot of ways and they'll do things that people feel are not proper, but they'll never compromise kosher and tell you it's fine. So that was good to hear. And I find that to be the case. This is not the area where they're going to make their point. Consider this, and this is the biggie, the box on page 6, and read this carefully because this is applicable to anyone that has non-religious kids, unfortunately, anyone that has non-religious relatives come to visit, anyone that's going to a business meeting in a restaurant. You're sitting at a table. Pick whatever restaurant you like. You order a bottle of wine, and they bring it to the table, and the Mashgiach even opens the wine, and the Mashgiach even pours the wine. So everything's fine. And now Aunt Betsy, who came from Memphis, Tennessee to visit, who's not religious, but she helps support the family, she's a wonderful person, but she's not religious. She never went to yeshiva. She doesn't know what Shabbos is. She says, this wine's great, let me have some more. That's it. The bottle's done according to most postmen. If it's a goy, and she's done according to everybody. If it's a Jew who's not religious, and we'll get into it, I'm not avoiding it, then you're done as well. This is the reason, for example, in a place like the OU in Israel, for example, has changed its policy. In a restaurant under the OU, you can no longer order a glass of non-Mavusha wine. So if you went to Café Rimon 6 months ago when it was under the OU, today it's not. It used to be, years ago, you could order a glass of wine for, I don't know, 25, 30 shekels. Now you had to buy a bottle for whatever that cost. So the average person would say, what a rip-off, now you got to buy a bottle. The rip-off has nothing to do with the restaurant. This was the Ashkacha. They decided, Ashkachas are trying to find new ways to prevent an Isur from being on the table. And they said the wine was a biggie. You bring a glass of wine, and he takes it, he passes it, he touches it, he pours it. So they said, we're going to bring wine, sealed bottle, here it is on the table, here's a cork. Some restaurants, like about Reuben Place, they'll say, would you like me to open it? Would you like to open it yourself? And that's the end of it. And then whenever the meal is finished, whatever's left in our bottle of wine gets poured out. That's it. Not allowed to keep it. Never ever allowed to use it again. It gets thrown out. So you can say Baltashvus. They say Baltashvus maybe, but it could be treif according to some people, so we're not playing the game. So this is where wine becomes problematic. And this now go back to the wedding, where you have non-religious waiters pouring wine, it's a problem. So to address your question, which I'm not ignoring, Halacha says someone who's Mechal Shabbos b'Fahesi, someone who's a public Shabbos desecrator who touches the wine makes it Stam Yenam like a goy does. The difference is they'll say for sure it's not Asa Bahano ever, but you shouldn't drink it either. There are many poskim that hold, and that's the policy by which the Badatz agencies operate, They will never let a non-religious Jew touch a bottle of wine, period. Not even Mavushal. The idea, and that's really its problem, because you can't start saying to the Goy, if it says Mavushal, a non-religious Jew can touch it. So they make a clout, don't touch the wine. The heter is based on a number of things. Number one, there are Rabbanim today, Chashav Rabbanim, like Rav Avad Yosef, for example. He says that it's very rare that someone is halachically defined today as a Mechal Shabbos profession. There are deot that say such a person would need Hatra'ah, meaning you need Eidim to warn him. He has to be about that. So, on Chil Shabbos, if you don't have Eidim, you go to the Bezdin, ha ha, I got away with it, no Eidim. So he's saying the same thing. You don't have Eidim, he doesn't know, he's a Tinoch Shanishpa, he's a guy who came from the former Soviet Union, no one ever taught him Moda'ani, yet alone about Stam Yeinan. No one's warned him. Hence, you're allowed to deal with it. Many people don't go along with it. Everyone has to ask their love, husband, wife, husband, whatever you do, and make your own decision how you deal with the non-religious Jew. The other, how is one defined a Mechal Shabbos for Hesia? From what I've seen, not as a Rav and not as a Posek, but from what I've seen across the board, an acceptable definition would be that halachically, not someone made this up, that if someone goes off the derech, for example, when you first would see them on Shabbos, the first reaction is duck into the alley, because here the guy's wearing jeans and a tank top, he's not dressed in Shabbos clothes. Or perhaps a better example of that person smoking a cigarette, and they see their Rebbe from high school from last year walking down the street, so they ditch the cigarette. How you doing, Rabbi? How you doing? Shabbat Shalom. When that person gets to the point where they're no longer duck into the alley and they no longer ditch the cigarette, meaning they're no longer embarrassed of the Chilul Shabbos, that's when they become a Mechal Shabbos Mefrahesi. That's the definition many people go by. So if you have a child who's not Mechal Shabbos, who's not Shomer Shabbos, God forbid, so that's the guideline some people use. Other people say it's a child. This is really stuff I want them to deal with. What you do, I have not all my kids a Shomer Shabbos, so for example, I make sure when these kids are home, I always have Mechal wine, and that really solves the problem. That's how I deal with it. Not pleasant, but that's reality in life. Because restaurants want to be high-end, just like in the United States, and high-end wine means non-mavushal. No. What is the definition of mavushal? The definition of mavushal is that the wine was brought to a boil. So what I will tell you to do, and in my class, we did this about a month ago, when we were covering wine, take a bottle of wine, take a 25, 30 shekel bottle of wine, whatever it is, not make sure it's like a dry table wine, non-mavushal. You don't have to waste your money buying a high-end. Take half the bottle, put it into a pot, and boil it and stir it. Make sure it doesn't just sit there burning. You know, stir it slowly. Let it go to a boil for 5 seconds, 7 seconds, no more. A rapid boil for a few seconds. Shut it off, cool it down, pour it back into the glass bottle. What I did is I went to the end because I wanted to eliminate the psychological factor. So I had an empty bottle of wine home, so I bought the same bottle. Boiled half, didn't boil the other half, poured them both into the same bottle. I put a sticker on the bottom so I knew what was what. And I put it on the table and said, taste it, see if you taste the difference. And everyone at that table, all 8, 10 of them, said without hesitation, this stuff's awful, this must be the Mavushal wine. Totally changes the taste of the wine, totally. I've done it several times, it always does the same thing. Halachically, for wine to become Mavushal, we'll go back a little bit, it has to have two components. It has to be qualitatively diminished the taste, and quantitatively reduces volume. And it has to boil a little. Boiling generates steam, hence the volume went down. Something evaporated. Doesn't mean it has to be noticeable to your eye, but you know if something boiled, steam left the pot, that means vapor left, there's less liquid there. And as far as the qualitatively, you just need to taste it, you'll know. So now comes pasteurization. Pasteurization was not done for kosher. Pasteurization, like with the milk industry, was done to address bacteria for health reasons, and for what I understand also permits a bottle of wine to be held on the shelf much longer. It's an all-around good thing for the client, for the seller, it's good for everyone. Pasteurization in Eretz Yisrael is 85 degrees centigrade, which is about 185 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's close to boiling, but it's not there, it's not 212. Rav Avad Yosef and Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal accept pasteurization as mevushal. They accept that heter. They say if it's pasteurized, the din kimuvushal. Rav Yashiv and other post-Eretz Yisrael said, close to boiling ain't boiling, it's not a deal. And if you understand the rationale, so they'll say, on the one hand, when they give the wine experts pasteurized wine, they say, yes, it diminishes it qualitatively. They can taste the difference. On the other hand, because it never boiled, they're saying it never quantitatively was reduced in volume, hence it's not mavusha. So it's a machlokas poskim. So if you want to rely on Rav Avadya and Rav Moshe Feinstein's head, then say fine. So you can use pasteurized wine at your table, anyone can touch it, and you cover it. And if you don't want to have a lie in it, then you mamash have to find mavusha wine. If you look for only mavusha, there's one bottle of wine I'm aware of, because we buy it when the kids aren't home. It's like 65 shekels a bottle. It's a blue bottle, it's called Bat Nura, and it's under the heksha of Rav, I can't remember his name, the Chabad Rav in Italy. It's not Gorelick, thank you. Happens to be mavusha, it's amazing, because it tastes like real wine, but yet it's mavusha. If you start going to the, what are the companies, Gamla, Yarden, all these different companies, or Barkan, all the high, or Carmel for that matter, and you start buying the higher end bottles, the real table wine that's probably closer to 80, 90, 100 shekels a bottle, none of them will be pasteurized, none of them will be mavusha, excuse me, because it simply cannot maintain that qualitative edge that it has. Once you mavusha it, then it's down and they're selling it in, you know, in Osha'ad for 20 shekels a bottle. So that's the difference. So Lamaisa is saying, and that's what Chazal said, once you've made it mavusha, because you've diminished it qualitatively, it's no longer ra'oi, it's no longer fit for Avodah Zarah. And because it's not fit for Avodah Zarah, now everyone can touch it. That was the whole concept of mavusha. So if you have mavusha wines, and pasteurized wines are easy. I will say, so you know as well, the Rabbanut Reshit accepts pasteurization as mavusha. So meaning, why is that significant? So if you go back to the same restaurant, and you're one of these people that say, I don't need that head, I don't want to live by it, and that's your decision. So you tell the waiter, brings out a bottle of wine, and Betsy from Memphis is here for another meal, and you say, is this bottle of wine mavusha? And he can say yes, because as far as they're concerned, it is. But for you, it may not be. So if you makpid on mavusha mamish, boiled wine, you need to start reading labels. Very few wines relative to what's being available in the shuk. Go down to any of the supermarkets here and start going down to each section of different wines and start looking for mavusha, you'll see very few mavusha. In the Haredi neighborhood, you'll find more than in a regular supermarket, because mavusha is also generally less expensive, and people here, sach hakol, many people are looking to make kiddush, and that's it. They're not looking for the higher end wines. They're not drinking wine during the meal as well. Although that's changed, you know, habits have changed. It's more, wine is more in use than it used to be, but in a Haredi neighborhood, I found you'll still find more mavusha than you will outside of a Haredi area.
Right, correct.
Mavusha is done only for Jews. No sane winemaker would take wine and boil it and diminish it. There's no point in it. It's contrary to what they're trying to do. It's done 100% for kashas, as opposed to pasteurization, it's done 100% for health. It happens to serve kashas, so Rabbanim came to the realization. I'll tell you something else just to show you if you want to go. So if you take the two components of mavusha, we said to qualitatively and quantitatively reduce the wine. I can't say I've seen it firsthand, but people I've spoke to do know who I've seen it. They told me in Carmel, for example, when they pasteurize the wine, and I can date myself, for those of you who remember in the old days, Welch's grape jelly. As a kid, I thought this was a great commercial, that's why I remember it. They always showed a pot boiling when they were making their grape jelly, and they had these little tube like a still coming off the top of the pot going back into the other side, and they said even when they cooked it they never let any of the flavor escape, because that's what makes Welch's so great. Well, apparently, I'm told, again it's not first hand but I deem it reliable enough to share it, when Carmel pasteurizes the wine they do the same thing, because they also don't want to compromise the taste. So rather than lose the steam with the flavor, it sends it back in. So some people say that even though Carmel is pasteurized, the head of the head of pasteurization, Kimavushal, does not apply, because it was not possible for it to have diminished in quantity. So others say it's not nogea, because wine that didn't boil isn't going to steam up anyway. Never boiled. It got warm. I'm just throwing these things at you to show you the back and forth, the different Rabbanim arguing the case. At the end of the day, it's a decision you have to make. Or if you live by a certain rav, say, Rav, can I accept this? You know, I'll tell you what I do. Not that it's not to tell anyone to do what I do, but Like, I have to find my place, because on the one hand I have family members I have to address. The other hand, I know it's halacha. L'chadchila, you should try to make kiddush on non-mevushal wine. It's a higher level kiddush. And l'chadchila on red wine. So on the one hand, you got people touching the wine, you don't want to have them touch it. The other hand, you want to have non-mevushal wine, so you can't say, all right, here's wine, I have kiddush, don't touch it. That doesn't work. I'm not looking to embarrass people. So in my mind, and that's the way my mind works, that gives you a little insight too. I use mevushal wine, I tell myself, if I don't need the mevushal, then this is non-mevushal for the kiddush. And if I need the mevushal, so it protects me for that. I try to sneak it in under the wire for both. Because to live in the real world, it's a difficult situation. But I think the wine is very important. And while I'm not telling anyone to view a non-religious person as a Mechal Shabbos professor or not, I would say that if you do have guests and you have that includes non-religious people, whether they're family or friends, I think it would be very kedai, and I would strongly urge you to speak to your Rav and ask them what it is you should do. Okay, because it does vary, there's shalom bias issues, but at the end of the day, these are big halachot, and the last thing you want to do is have wine getting trafed up, not knowing it, and then using it again and giving it to others as well. There was a period of time in our home, we had people in Giyur, Talach Giyur, were coming to the house regularly, and I have to say, to the credit of the Giyur programs, and I had people from Carlos's Giyur and from Machon Meir's Giyur, and that's quite a hashkafic jump from one to the other. And they both, there must be the first day they come into class, they say, my name is, and then they get taught, don't touch the wine. Because I can tell you, these guys came into the house, I'm talking a lot of people over 2 years, no one ever would agree to touch the wine. They said, no, we can't, no, no. The wine's going down the table, and they sit here like this. They all do it like this, no touch the wine. So I was very impressed. They said, no, we can't touch the wine. We look forward to the day when we can. Right now we can't. So I asked them, I said, what about its mevushal? Want to test them to, and they said, no, we're told you cannot touch the wine, doesn't matter what it is. You can pour for me, and then I can drink it, and that's it. And I have to finish what's in my cup. And I said, wow, kol hakavod. So obviously when they're teaching people giyur, they're covering their bases at the kol hadayot. That's what Mahadran does. For example, in Mahadran restaurants, there's one place on Rehov Bezalel called Benny Dagim, a very famous Jerusalem restaurant, a fish restaurant, if you haven't guessed. It's under the Rabbanut Mahadran, has been for many years. So it happens to be, with the exception of the Mashkiach, when the owner's there, everyone else in the store is basically an Arab. There's not a Jew in the store. So I know the Mashkiach that was there last year, I haven't been back since. The Mashkiach was great. And that's a hard job for Mashkiach, for one who really cares, and he did. He was in the kitchen all the time, lighting the gas and cooking. And it obviously never reached Bishul Yisrael for Sfardim, but he did a good job for Ashkenazim. I have to say, I believe he did. I thought Ashkenazi was fine over there. But I asked him because I know it's a place that uses a lot of wine. They cook fish with wine as well. It's a high-end fish restaurant. And he told me that's where it gets difficult. But basically, he opened the wine and he had his simonim that he did. He had a thing of tape on his belt. And when after he used the wine, he put it on, signed something, whatever shtick he did. And he knew that no one would touch it. The goyim there, he said, also knew if they ever touched the wine, they're fired. That was the way that it was presented to them. It's not like, don't hand it to me, don't put it down, don't give it to the chef. Touch the wine, you're fired. And that's what they do in hotels too, by the way. There's a lot of do this and you're fired stuff, because that's the only way. The rabbanim in hotels will always tell you the worst thing that can happen to kashrus in a hotel is that a goy learns the inyan of batel b'shishin. Once they've learned that, you're over, you're done. That's why, by the way, in hotels, that's not nogeya. Meaning lechachila, I've seen it firsthand in front of me where stuff in anyone's home, any Rav would have said is matarit, it was 100% less than, it was more than 60 to 1 by any standard, it wasn't even close. Hotel, it gets filled out, gets thrown out. Because it's a commercial setting, there's no room for leaves. See, the only time you see an exception is Shabbos, where a Rav would have to come in before he parcels the cholin for 500 guests. You better know there's no head to get around it, because once a Shabbos, everyone's standing at the main desk looking for a refund. And that's where you'll see an exception also, or Erev Shabbos or Hefsin Meruba. That's where you can get a Hefsin Meruba, where you're talking about food for hundreds of people. But lechachil in a hotel, they're out of Rav, they're strict to the point you never have to be in your home. Things get thrown out more frequently than one would imagine. I remember the last time I was used to be the Holiday Inn, now I forget what it's called. Now it's called, I don't remember. But in the Jewish Lime, and there was a whole scene that happened while I was there, and Mashkiach's a good friend, so he let me come along to watch. And basically, the guy had just finished the sheet pan, which was six cakes, large cakes. like these little chocolate bonbons around the top. These are the cakes they serve in the lobby. You know, you go in for a cup of coffee and a piece of cake, and next thing you know, it's 70 shekels, those cakes. And the mashgiach looked, and on the way up in the elevator, he already told me what happened. He knew, and he told me what he was going to do, and I said, wow, that's cool. Told me he's dumping all the cakes. I said, this I want to see. So the head baker is there, who's a Jew. The vice head baker, the deputy, who's an Arab, he's the one that did this. The hotel manager's already standing there. This is an amazing thing. You realize what a mashgiach has to go through. But this is a guy, he's a tremendous Talmid Chacham in Yerushalayim. He's been there for 20 years. He's not intimidated. So he walks over, he says, what are you doing? Apparently, there's two sets of bonbons. One is locked in the mashgiach's office. They're daily. The other one is parv. If you look quickly, they look exactly the same. If you look carefully, you can tell one's milk chocolate, one's bittersweet chocolate. He never wanted to allow both. He said, pick one, you can't have both in the pantry because they look, they're too close together, they'll get mixed up. And you understand, when you get to be bakers and chefs of this Rama, of this level, it's not just getting paid for the day. They take pride in what they do. And he had to have those milk and bonbons. And he couldn't be Mavata and a Pav. He needed both for different things. So they came with an agreement that the milk and ones would be locked up in the mashgiach's office. And whenever they wanted them, they would come and get the mashgiach, unlock the office, they would put them on the cake, because that's all they use them for. He would stand there for 5-10 minutes, then they'd put them back and lock it up. That's what they did. And we were now in the middle of the test period, he told me. This started about a month and a half ago. So what happened? Somewhere along the line, the box was left out, and Ahmed literally took the mail, the dairy things and put them on what should be a puff cake. Yeah, if it was a cheesecake, we wouldn't have this discussion, but it was one of these large puff torts. And like I said, there were 6 of these things. And if you figure this on average, seriously, 30 to 40 shekels a slice, times like 10 slices of cake, it's a lot of money. And Bob walks in, he said, what happened? He's listening. And I realized he already made up his mind. This is cool how they do this. And he told them, and then the baker told them what they're going to do, and then he listened to the manager. Okay, I got it. Took the tray, in the garbage can, the whole thing. Everyone started yelling. He didn't bat an eyelash. He said, now give me whatever. He took like vinegar or something like that. He poured it all over to make sure no one's taking the cakes out. Then he took the box of chocolate, threw that in the garbage, poured vinegar on top of that, and then he said, now we're back to only having 12 bonbons. Now you know why I said no. That was the end of the discussion. So we went back down and continued our meeting. He got, I would say, 3 or 4 calls from different higher level management in the hotel while I was there. And he just said, no, that's it. And that was the end of it. So we started the cakes from the beginning. But if you don't have someone who's that much of a Yerusha mind who can't take the heat, or who has that much job security, that's where it becomes problematic. The hotels, like I said, in Yerushalayim, the 6, 8, 9, 10 hotels that I've seen, the mashgichim are all of that caliber. Some a little more, some a little less. But they are learned enough that they also have to be very proficient to be a Shabbos mashgiach in a hotel. I've discussed it when I speak on hotels. You have to be very, very knowledgeable about Hilchos Shabbos. Not to be, like for me, it's easy. I would say everything's awesome, you're done. But when you sit, it's true, to be machmir, you don't have to be Talmid Chacham. But when you have to give a heter on Shabbos to permit something, that's when you really have to know halacha. And these guys do. And that's where it really is nice to see when the system does work. Anyway, somehow we got off from wine to chocolate cake and Shabbos. Okay, so anyway, remember something. There's also a halach of nitzoch, you know, with pouring. Sfardim don't have this, like with cooking also, when you have steam coming up of a hot pot and you sprinkle spices in, and the steam's coming off. But for Ashkenazim, those spices are really bosari, if that was chicken soup. You can't use that now for a puff cake. You need to have separate spices. People aren't aware of that. Because the halacha goes, you know, and with wine, when you're pouring it in, so if our aunt from Memphis, Tennessee now drank the wine, she liked it. And it doesn't matter, even if she finished the glass, that you don't visibly see anything left. If she now pours from that bottle back into the glass, or Goy for that matter, Goy will make it so there's no controversy. His Stam Yenam now goes back into the bottle, Derech, the pouring wine. And that everyone agrees on. So that's why we go back to our American wine and cheese tasting, where they said that the rabbis will pour the wine because we're not having non-Jews handle wine or non-religious Jews, and there will be no refills. That's why there's no refills, because once someone drank from the glass, and that's why when you look at a wedding also, it's something you can watch. These will give you a good idea of what kind of hashkoch is going on. When average guy doesn't catch it. So if you have non-religious people pouring, that's already, you're done. Now let's say you have religious people pouring. But if you see he's just refilling cups for everybody randomly, you know, it's not right. If it's a Frum guy and he's refilling, fine. But if it's a guy who doesn't look Frum, he shouldn't be refilling his cup. So you could say it could be Ravusho. But all I'm trying to say, I'm showing you different things where you can not catch, but you can monitor a situation without really saying much and without really looking too heavily to get a grasp. Wine is one of the places where many of the Ashkochas just are lazy, or just these halachas got forgotten. They don't enforce it. So it's very easy to ascertain. One second, you were first. Doesn't have to be connected. I can have the glass here and pour it like this. It's out. Once you refill the cup, it's out. Which brings you back to the restaurant. So even though it's out, you fill it, you're gone. And if you find someone that says you're not, let me know, because I haven't found anyone that does. Seriously. That's why, so the OU said, to their credit, we're not only going to serve full bottles of wine instead of the glasses, but admittedly, it's only a partial solution, because once the bottle's open on the table, if anyone who should not be handling the bottle is now handling it, you're back where you started from. And ideally, if you asked the Ashkochas, they would say we'd rather not have wine offered at all, or only Mavusha wine, like someone mentioned earlier. But there is only, I don't know, like maybe Eid HaChavid only has Mavusha wine. I don't know. I have to say, I can't tell you. I don't know. I have to really think of trying to check it out once. But I can't even think of a restaurant fancy enough with Eid HaChavid Hechsher that would even be serving wine. So that's why I'm thinking. Right, they have like diners that serve Bosiri, you know, like a hamburger place. You're not getting the glass of wine, of course, more than the hamburger. You do have the Rav Reuben has some fancier places. So the truth is, I could ask them what they do. I don't know. But the idea is that Rav Bonham are trying to prevent having an issue on the table. And once this wine is open, that's a potential for a lot of problems. But what I do know is that they will all take this wine, throw it out, and back to Benny Dagim, the Rabbanut. That Mashgiach, at least when he was there, at the end of the day, I know the wine was dumped. But often called by standards of the Chief Rabbanut Mahadran. Now we'll go back to Gorea for a general statement. Chief Rabbanut Mahadran has its standards as well. One of those standards are, we didn't cover it in any of the lectures this year, but there's a concept for those who are familiar with of Linas Laila, Linat Laila, where certain foods, because of Ruach, while certain foods are not permitted to remain overnight. And that would be an unpeeled egg, according to some, even a hard-boiled egg with a shell that's not mixed. For sure, peeled egg, garlic, peeled garlic, open bottle of wine, open cups of water, beverage. What? Onions, for sure, if you cut off the root, the hair part. So if you're peeling an onion at home, by the way, so always start from the other end. As long as the hair, the little beard is on there, it's not considered peeled. It's not a problem with Linas Laila. Once that's cut off and the onion is peeled, and leaving out overnight means even if it's sitting in a refrigerator shelf in two baggies, it's still out overnight. So in a Mahadran restaurant, for example, when a Mashkiach comes in the morning, if he's doing his job, he should be there when they open up before other people. The starter bottle of wine has to be dumped. The cut up onions have to be dumped. The open garlic has to be dumped. Anything that's out overnight. The Rabbanut Mahadran mandate says Linas Laila applies. You're not allowed to use any of that stuff. So again, this is another concept. I will always refer back. I hope people slowly put the pieces of the puzzle together that when someone has a business without Hashkoch and they advertise all ingredients of Adats, I hope we're starting to realize that in addition to the ingredients, there are a lot more issues involved, right? Whether do you periodically sift the spices for bugs, which you should, and Eretz Yisrael, or at least after you sift it, keep them refrigerated, then you don't have to. Is the flour sifted properly? I know many people, they mean well, they sift the flour, and a week later they use it, but if you didn't refrigerate it, a week later you have to sift it again, according to our volume, not according to the Yechiel Spira. If you freeze it, you don't have to do it again. You know, and there's issues of the wine, there's an issues of Linas Laila, there's so many different issues, which is why people do have Ashkochot. Yes?
The bar. And Sprite and stuff. Yeah. But you can also get
wine, liquor.
Right. So Leila's never seen.
That's true. So that's why, depending what the Hashkocha is, you'll see the difference.
Now, if it's Scotch, is it less
no,
of a problem?
No, but Ray Guffin. Scotch is no problem. Scotch is like soda.
Oh, but the
anything that's not Ray Guffin is fine.
So they don't. Maybe they don't have wine. Maybe they just have liquor.
So then you're fine. Then you'll only have an issue of if the liquors are kosher, that's the only problem there. But one would hope they are, that's all. That seems to be, by the way, something that's gotten under the radar. It's changing very slowly, but it's under the radar that even with the Edech Haredit, you can get to an affair and a Baal Simcha will bring in a bottle of whiskey, whatever it is, and it's sort of, it goes. You know, and I'm not saying they're treif, but I'm saying, you know, vodka, pretty much the world agrees. Unflavored vodka, most people still agree, doesn't need a hashi, even though you can buy with hashem today now so easily. You can even buy scotch with hashem today. Although, the truth is, the cheaper the scotch, the less problematic it is. Because the more it's sitting in the wine barrel, and it goes into the sherry barrels, and the double oak, and meaning the better it is, the more you have to worry. But we're not getting into that, and I'm far from qualified to give a lecture on it. I know how to drink it pretty well, but I'm not lecturing on it. Okay, now we go for Ashkenazim, Stam Yanam, six parts of one. Okay, one may not intentionally do it, we've done. If we once pointed out that when we sell our chametz, items prohibited during the Passover holiday, you realize this text was obviously written for people who know less than the people here, but I wasn't rewriting it. Wine may be sold since in actuality it remains the home of the Jew in a closed area. There's no fear of the non-Jew moving and permitting the inclusion of the sale. And that's according to our Pinchas Scheinberg. So that's a pretty good posek to cover you. I mean, you can't sell the wine. If you sold it and you stored it out of your house, then you have to ask around. But as long as the chametz is locked up in your house, selling the wine to the goy is not a problem for as long as you know the bottle was there and no one touched it. It becomes problematic if it leaves the premises. Did you know, as we're beginning to see, a non-Jew simply cannot handle wine. As such, wineries with respectable action only employ Shomer Shabbos Jews. We did this. Types of wine. Wines rendered prohibited but touch of a non-Jew include grape juice, raisin wine, providing they clear and separated from the skins and pulp, but may still be in the same vessel. I do explain a bit in the footnote. It's not really relevant to get into it at length, so I won't do it here, you can read it. The prohibited touch, all right? There's basically a difference. If someone picks up the bottle, or it says in Halacha L'shach Sheik, to shake it, you're done. All right, but there are, I have to say, for the people that know the halachas, they're very strict. Like, this seems to be, the wine law seems to be something like mushrooms. Like, I found people either love mushrooms or hate mushrooms. There's no one who's blasé about mushrooms. They're either great or they're awful. So with the wine, either people are machmir pretty much all the way. Like, don't touch the wine, don't clean under the bottle, don't wipe it down. There's also a day-out, by the way, I quoted it here somewhere. There are day-out that say that if a goy looks at the wine, it puzzles the wine. Which is why you have wine bottles that are dark green, for that reason. It's not because it's such a cheap wine that they don't want you to see the color. It's also, it's so the goy can't give it the whammy by looking at it. That's what someone of our bottom explained to me. I thought that was pretty good. A Gentile's touch only renders the wine prohibited if done intentionally and with the realization that the liquid is wine. Meaning if you had a flask and he thought it was anything but wine, Al-Pi-Alochi, you're fine. Because the lines are thin, that is to say, we don't generally know what is on their mind, as I pointed out earlier. I don't think there's a great deal in Ahmed's mind on a regular day, so I don't know. And I will tell you something, I'll go off the track again, which I like. Many, many years ago, when one of my first visits to Chevron in the 1980s, I remember the souvenir shop sold Chevron wines. That was not a big chiddush. What stood out in my mind to this very day is that they had bags for the wine. No one in Eretz Yisrael in 1984 had a paper bag. This was a non-existent thing. But you went to Chevron, they put the wine in bags. And I went over to the guy and said, "This is amazing. No one else has a bag. In Chevron, you have bags?" He said, "We have to." I said, "Why?" He says, "Because the Arabs aren't allowed to drink." I said, "Yeah." He said, "So they all buy the wine and put it in a paper bag and take it home. If we would have plastic, we wouldn't sell to them. So we figured out if we buy paper bags, they all buy the wine." I said, "Wow, that's great." So that's as much as a lot of the guys in Chevron adhering to their religion, not drinking wine. I like that. Because the lines are so thin, we don't know. Lamaisa people will usually be strict. And if a goy touches the wine, I can tell you, even in some Haredi supermarkets where there's non-Jews working, and they get to the register and they're packing, I've seen it, where the goy will not touch that bottle of wine, will not pack it, will lay it there on the register, and if you look, they'll tell you, "I'm not allowed to touch it, you deal with it." The store tells them, "Don't touch the wine." The truth is, that's the best policy. Just like Beit Yosef, for example, the Medatz is very strict about Bishul Yisrael, so I actually saw one restaurant where they have a painted line. The goy knows, "Cross the line, you got it." I really think if someone, Chas Shalom, dropped dead on the other side of the line and he knew CPR, he would not cross that line to start it, because he knows if you cross that line, you're gone. So, like I said, in a commercial setting, you have to be stringent. In a home setting, there's room for leniency. But on the other hand, I will say, you need to know, and I love this in a home, because in a home, there's less control. There's kids, there's grandkids, there's people who don't know, there's people that visit. And home, I dare say, I don't think anyone has a home where things don't get mixed up now and then. The idea is to learn basic halacha. You don't have to know what the psak halacha is. You have to know enough to know when to ask. And if you know when to ask, you're covered. That's really the law. If you know when to ask a shayla, you do great in life. You just have to have the Vav Sel number on speed dial, and you're on the air. It's true. We're not supposed to be poskim. We're supposed to know enough halacha to know. If you know what to do, fine. But when you get into a jam, you call the Vav and say, this is what happened. I call, there's one or two Rabbanim I call all the time, never listen to it. I don't give myself piskei halacha when a pot, something gets mixed up. And I ask because, and it's a learning experience too, because I'm always, the questions that they ask surrounding it, you know, every situation is different. Was it bar yomo? No. Hot, cold, what was the surface, and all kinds of other things. If a non-Jew pours wine into the glasses of guests attending an event, even if he used a gloved hand, the wine is prohibited. And that's according to Igros Moshe of Moshe Feinstein. The glove does nothing, it's not a chatzitza. Same thing if you put a wine in one of those plexiglass or metallic pourers or like this, doesn't help. The goy is the one who's actually facilitating the wine moving from the bottle to the cup. He doesn't have to actually physically touch the bottom. And Rav Moshe also, Derech Agav, Loz Lun Shubas, he's also one that always tries to be makel. He doesn't go the strict side as a general rule, and I think it's pertinent. Again, it keeps coming up, wine, the inyan choshuv ma'od, not to be mezalzel, but inyanim, it has to do with stam yinan. Okay, and I go into a little detail, which I'll let you read on page 7, about touching it, shaking it, moving it, cleaning it. I try to cover in an outline form to give you enough information that you can get an idea or know when you should worry. Again, I will stress over and over again, if you have people in the house that are problematic and you have wine, then it's kedai to speak to you, Rav, and ask to have guidelines, what would be the best way to address my situation. Especially when you go to work, which many of us do, we try to, and if the person knows that you leave in the morning, you don't come back till the nighttime, and no one else is home, that is really, really, really must speak to Rav and find out what to do with certain items in the house, wine included. If a non-Jew poured water or carbonated soda water into wine, it's done intentionally, the wine is prohibited. Okay, touching. Mavushal and pasteurized, I gave you orally pretty much what's here, although here it's kedai to read, it will give you more information with the makarot and who paskins accordingly, who's makel, who's machmir. As I write on page 9 in the box, if it does not say mavushal, it's not. A note about wine has been disqualified by touch, wine to a boiled tender party of non-Jews, we know pasteurization. Okay, did a pretty good job getting into the details in a certain amount of time. Jews are not observant, I cover on page 10. I think that's worth everyone knowing because we should all be zoche having guests and having people at the table, whether religious or not, they're still Jews. And hopefully one day this will be an impetus to helping them back home where they should be. And this is for sure the Shalom Bayis problems as well. I will say for myself, we do have Baruch Hashem, we merit having a lot of guests, and they wore us down. We've gotten to the point, I beg people, don't bring anything. Nothing, not a thing, not a sealed bottle of wine, not even a tush to buy, so don't bring anything. And there are people who just can't come and they bring something and it's inevitably, so then I just basically say when people come, there's a table, they know, put it here, that's it, don't look at it. But just last night I was speaking to a fellow who's one of these guys who always says, but I'd like to use this wine at the table, and I like this wine. So I explained to him, now he's been coming to Shia for a few months, he understands a little bit more. And he said, wow, now I get it. I said, you get it is, you don't, the last thing you want to do is embarrass them. I think that's probably up there with the worst things you can do at a Shabbos table. If you can't sit there realistically, because I can't, I don't have the knowledge and the tact to sit there and say, okay, this one we'll use, this one we won't use, so you're good, you're bad. Well, it's ridiculous. So I tell people, we have a rule, whatever you bring, leave it on the table, I don't deal with it on Shabbos. And I don't want them to focus on the fact that it could be they bought it or not. And most of the time, Baruch Hashem, no one brings us anything anymore, except for in last Shemitah, I remember a lot of people said, I knew you said we can't bring any food, so we brought flowers. I said, that doesn't work for Shemitah either, I'm sorry. But, people don't know, and they mean well. So now we just keep telling them, don't bring, free meal, come, hands in your pockets, don't carry anything. You try your best. There were a lot of wines over the years. I've gotten some bottles of amazing Hechsherim. I have a book home that Rabbi Wickler in New York City puts out. The last edition was 1,063 hashkachas around the world. It's an amazing thing. I mean, gathered some of repeats, but he's got probably 800 plus in there, and managed to get bottles of wine that aren't listed in his book. I don't know who makes these hashkachas up. Like, I have no idea. We never traced them. You can't give it away. I'm not going to do anything. So I poured it down the sink. Doesn't see us a dime sink. Not in my sink that I use for food. What? What? Yeah, no one's spending that kind of money. What are you going to do? Yeah. Hashem will guarantee when they get it to the warehouse. That's about it. It's not their problem after that. So that's why, but Lamai said that's why you have chotem mitol chotem. You have a double seal that covers you. If a goy touches a sealed bottle, it's fine. Even though they try to get a non-Jew to the habit that he or she should never touch it. But Lamai said be halacha, you have two seals. It's fine. Even in the supermarket, it's a double seal. That's why you have a double seal. One, it's chotem mitol chotem. This way, if a goy touches it, he didn't render it anything. He just picked up. Cork is one, and that thing on top that grabs it is two, or the screw top and the thing on top. So what I would say is, if one of the seals is compromised, I would not buy that bottle of wine. That's important, because then already getting into a gray area halachically. And again, Chazal do not give us the ability to decide if the goy did or didn't. Honestly, the Chazal say you need two seals. If not, you shouldn't be buying it. That's the Maisa, and we discussed it. As far as meat deliveries, is the same thing, by the way. If a non-Jew delivers your meat, if it doesn't have two seals, you need to speak to your rabbi. You should probably tell the butcher. If it has a good hechsher, they're not allowed to do it. You know, like the Rav Reuben fish store, he has to double seal things that he delivers. He's not allowed to deliver it in one seal. And one seal could be the packaging itself. If it's a three, then you already cover two. You have a hamshachiyut. But I'm saying if you have the one, or there's a store down here, I don't remember his name, he opened up in the Ramah Center, left side or in the corner somewhere, but it's a Badat's take-home food store. So like they only will allow a Haredi guy deliver the food from the factory in Shalim to here and unload. They keep the chain going. They're trying to minimize the problems, that's all. Eventually, because as long as they're taking hashkach on the store, so they're responsible for how it got to the store. If it wasn't their store, meaning if the store had no hashkach, they wouldn't care. Just like in a supermarket, as long as the bottle integrity of the seal is intact, it guarantees you anything was tampered with, it's not our problem anymore. Or the case with catering, when it's an Eda Chavedit caterer made it, he shipped it somewhere else. Once it left the kitchen, Eda Chavedit's done. Or the OU, or Badat's, anybody for that matter. It's not Shayach to any caterer.
If you have a restaurant,
they have sealed wine, you're fine, it's sealed. That's what this lecture is about. You got to decide. It's a fact of life in the restaurants. It shouldn't be, in my opinion. No one asked me, though. It presents problems. I'll leave it as it presents problems, because you have a bunch of a lot bigger than anything I'm going to know, but obviously it presents problems to the point where there are local concerns. You're right. But that's why these restaurants are starting to hire in the Hashem. I don't know what they do. Lamaisa, you have the reality today, just like, you know, when Rabbi Avadia said years ago, the chief rabbi started giving hashkach in hotels. And he says, I never wanted to give hashkach in a hotel. I know what goes on in a hotel. But he said, you get to a point, there's reality, or Rav Dov Berkowitz Lito, who gives his Torah Sabayas hashkach. A few homes in his tzibur, of wives of kollel people that they know personally, have hashkacha. Why? Because he knows the reality is today is people are going to buy take-home food. People are going to hotels. So the rabbanim who really are in the loop say, so I have to address it. So you can stay here with blindfolds and say, I guess it's something like I see in the shul, for example. So the rabbanim in Israel say, internet's possible and I don't want to hear about it. There's other rabbanim would say it's part of our life and it's going to be used, so let's educate the tzibur how to use it properly within the guidelines of halacha. It's the same thing with hotels. So a lot of people had to be covered against the rabbinate. So they say you're giving hashkacha in a hotel and assuming you do your job right, the kitchen's wonderful. And there's no chilul Shabbos in the kitchen. What about the lobby, the checkout, the this, the that, the swimming pool, the music? So when I asked Rav Avadi, he said, you're right, but I can only do what I can do. And I decided I can provide a kosher atmosphere in the kitchen and the dining hall. The Mahadran hotels are supposed to take it when that started. That the next step is they're supposed to ensure the other things as well. But the point is, you can conceivably have a kosher kitchen, and you could be walking around in today's world, being Mechallel Shabbos, at least Bagrama, with the sensors popping off, and in the bathrooms, and the door locks. I found out, I didn't know that. I mean, I didn't research in depth, but I read tshuvas that when you go to a hotel, let's say, like a lot of people in the United States have to do, and they have these credit card keys. So you go down in the thing, you explain, you say, but I need a key, and they give you a key. When you do this with the key, it does the same electronic imprint as the credit card does. So you feel better, but you haven't done anything. So I say all these things need to be addressed. And when a hotel is built to be a Mahadran hotel, it's a world of difference. That's why when people call, can I eat here? They made it Mahadran, what do you do? I don't answer anymore. I tell them, go speak to Rabbi. Because even if the kitchen is good, and I say even, and the problems, you could write several lectures on it, but even if it's good, what about the rest of the hotel? I'm not talking about environment or tznius had address. I'm talking about Chilul Shabbos. You know, like when you're sitting in the lobby of a hotel on Shabbos afternoon. And think of it. I don't know if people do these things. I've seen it. And I want a cup of coffee, room 112. Where does that room 112 go to? He writes it down. He goes to the desk. They type it in the computer. You ever notice? As soon as you put out the Abdullah candle, if you want to the checkout, your bill is all ready. How did they get all that information in there? Because they're working on Shabbos. So that they work on Shabbos, not your headache. And usually in the Mahadran hotels, it's supposed to have Goyim doing it. But I just happen to know someone who was a Rebbe of mine, a Mashkiach teacher, I call him. He was in a hotel. He used to be a guy in the Marechet. And Ahmed, who was supposed to be on duty Shabbos, got sick the last minute. And Ahmed became Yossi. So when you tell him a cup of coffee, room 112, Yossi was being Mechallel Shabbos because of your coffee. Understand something? What I'm trying to say is, it's such a difficult situation. L'chadchila, Jews shouldn't be going to these places to begin with. So the Rabbanim said, you're going to go. Let's do what we can do about it. So when you get to a level where you start really understanding, it's not enough. I'm going to go to a non-Mahadran hotel all year because someone came in there with a pail of hot water and kosher the kitchen. There's many, many other aspects involved. And even the kitchen's problematic because I'll give you one example, the dishwasher. Mahadran hotels must have two dishwashers. The non-Mahadran generally have one. There's still many places like that around the country. Well, you ever notice, you go like, if you ever went to the Plaza, for example, like you'd want to, you know, have that marvelous buffet when we first came. People would daven, someone should come from America, take us to the Plaza, Shabbos lunch, get some food. You know, and the guys are behind the counter serving, and you'd say, oh, I paid, I want to take the spoon, let me serve. And they're told, don't give him the spoon. Eventually, if you pull out a gun, he's going to give you the spoon. He's not going to get into a fight with you. But what was the point? Because the rabbi told him not to give you the spoon, not because they're worried about you taking too big a portion. It's because they're worried about Shalola geese, that you shouldn't get in there and mix it, because the stuff is in the sterno. It's in it's on the burner. So it's a kli rishon. And if you get in there with a spoon in the deep pot, and you start looking for the potato, it's bishul midaraisa, according to most poskim. That's why they don't want you touching the spoon. The Rabbanim had things, you know, so what they did is, they now changed, if you go to the Plaza, you'll see that deep dish like this is now like this. So it's not Magis, no matter what you do, it's not really stirring. And they just make the goyim, change the pans more often. So I'm saying there's so many issues involved. Chutz made a chicken shchita, which is what everyone worries about. Going to a non-Mahadran hotel should compel one to at least think. And I will close, the rest of this I guess you'll read on your own, or not. I will close by saying two things. Number one, I hope you appreciate the label in the back. If you want it in color, email me, I'll send you the digital version. You can tell someone used Google Translate on here. I think it's outstanding. It says, B'li chashash, you know, tumu mais and orlo, which was translated to tithing and foreskin. And it's printed on the label. I didn't make it up. So much for Google Translate. Like now is a big season. All the Pesach ads are coming out. And again, we are our own worst enemy. On one hand, we go and take time to go to shul and we try to learn. On the other hand, the consumer is, by and large, a very being led by a chain, doing whatever they stuff down our throat. I see many, I don't know if it's most, I don't do statistic and analytical research, but more and more places are advertising for Pesach saying, I call Mahadran, I call Badat. But no one ever mentions the name of a Hashkacha, no one mentions the name of a Rav, and no one has an idea who's responsible for the kashrus. So we know there's tennis courts, and we know there's 24-hour tea rooms, we know there's Daf Yomi, we know there's Shiurim, we know there's food nonstop, but we don't know who's responsible for anything. And I'm just amazed that no one even stops to say, wow, who's the Rav Hamash here? And who kosher the place? Who made it kosher for Pesach? Or it's not Pesach. Who made it? You know what I'm saying? And I think people need to start calling up the hotels. If enough people question it or say, I'm sorry, this is not suitable, it would compel them to go back to the old way where there's some accountability. And right now, I think we only really have to blame, I don't mean us, the people here, I mean the consumer in general. Because the need to go away, for whoever that affects, it's not us to go away, but it shouldn't supersede halacha concerns. And Pesach, obviously, because during the year we do have batel b'shishim, or 200 for oil, or 6 to 1 for wine, Pesach we have nothing, it's us to b'mashim. So there is no rule, there's no margin of error, there's no error for Pesach. And Baruch Hashem, I can speak again for the Yerushalayim hotels, they are well in the shvum of kashrut for Pesach. It's an amazing thing. This is a 3 to 4 month process. And I will, one of the Rabbonim who lets me use his name, but I don't choose to give him more tzolos, give him enough tzolos. Like he questions, he said, tell this to people when you lecture, let them think about it. In Eretz Yisrael we're koshering from Mahadrin kosher to kosher for Pesach. In the United States, they take all these different hotels and the different hashkachas for these great Pesach Rest Till You Burst festivals, and they kasher from treif to kosher Pesach. Us, it takes 4 months. They do it in 4 days. How do they do it? That's food for thought. Thank you for joining. We are having one last week. Rabbi Milinowitz requested that it's to Shovin Plus. Next week is Truma Maisa, Ola, Kalayim, Shemitah, Mitzvos, Tulos, Ba'aretz. Have a good night. Someone requested that I bring a dairy. I don't remember if you needed one or two. One, I bought two.